Grace Vata, now Rector of Defense for Slaughter Key, but always a Vata at heart, looked at the background report on Vata's new senior staff. All of the most promising successors to Stavros and Gerard had been killed in the initial attack on Vata, and two in the next tier had been assassinated while she herself had been busy protecting Helen and the children, setting up the demise of those who had been in on the attack, and managing the day-to-day affairs of Vata. But she had spotted the few likely candidates early on. With the change in government, with no new assassination attempts in the past half year, they were now running Vata's much-reduced business. The Tick Orchards and the on-planet transport services, surface, sea, and air, that moved the Tick harvest to market. For some reason, Grace could not be sure because the ones who knew or might have known were now dead. The attackers had missed Vata's newer installations at the air and spaceports, as well as the two Vata transport ships docked at the planet's commercial orbital station when the attack occurred. One of those had been lost later on its arrival in another port. Only one Vata transport ship remained in contact with Slaughter Key, traveling in a restricted circuit. Now, a new problem had arisen. Vata Transport had one corporate headquarters here on Slaughter Key, where its registered legal presence had been for the past several hundred years. And it had another corporate headquarters on the Moscow Confederation on Cascadia Station, where Stella had set up her offices. With the system Ansibles out, that had made sense. Had been, in fact, the only way to keep going. But now, with Ansible service restored, at least temporarily, it meant that two head offices were a confusion instead of a godsend. Maxim Vata Termanian, running the local office, seemed to be honest, hardworking, and just barely capable of handling his new job. He was Vata by marriage, had taken the Vata name only after the disaster in which his wife, an accountant at corporate headquarters, was killed. Maxim, a botanist, had been halfway through a 90-day internship at a remote research lab on the far side of the planet that day, working on a project to make tick trees more resistant to follicle rust. When first appointed, he'd expressed doubt that he could do the job, citing his lack of training and his love of research. So Grace would have expected Maxim to be happy for a chance to get back to a lab somewhere and turn over leadership of the company to Stella. But that wasn't proving the case.
I'm not doing that badly, and I'm learning every day. I'm a quick learner.
He was thin, intense, leaning forward into the video pickup, his fingers drumming on the arms of the chair. Grace looked at the pulse in his throat and wondered if he was on something.
Just because Stella's his daughter doesn't mean she should inherit his job. I mean, look at her past. And Stavros made mistakes. If he hadn't, none of this would have happened.
And Maxim would have been just another married-in scientist.
Do you really blame Stavros for what happened? What mistake do you think he made?
He didn't see the threat coming. He didn't know about the charges.
That wasn't his job, Maxim.
Well, putting someone in charge of company security was his job, and he didn't do a very good job of picking whoever it was.
That would be me.
You?
Yes. And before you try to get your foot out of your mouth by saying something else, let me give you a few reality checks. I was not tasked to infiltrate the Slaughter Key government and find out if elements in it were cooperating with off-planet criminals determined to attack Vata headquarters and personnel. If you want to blame me for not knowing that the president, senior officers in Space Force, and others in the administration were involved, fine. Blame me. But that, the collusion of Slaughter Key's government, is what made the attack possible and continued to make attacks on our people possible until I brought down the government.
Now he was even paler, sitting back away from the pickup, as if to put as much distance between himself and Grace as possible.
You brought down the government?
With some help from others, of course. But yes, the reason you are still alive today is that I acted in Vata's best interest.
Maxim said nothing. Grace waited a long moment.
The job of a corporate security chief is complex enough without considering that a government that's always been friendly and cooperative may be yielding to blackmail or other pressure and becoming hostile. I dealt with internal matters specific to Vata and with long-standing threats from without, such as piracy. The day of the attack, I had a new report to show Stavros. Never had the chance to deliver it.
Well, all right. But that still doesn't mean Stella should be CEO. She's not even here.
No. She's established a successful branch of Vata where she is. Where she started alone, with minimal resources, and now has 16 trade ships up and running, and a very successful manufacturing program for a unique and highly desirable product. Her profit ratio's climbing fast. Yours isn't.
But she's... She's...
Maxim, you don't have the votes. You can either fight and lose what you have, or leave gracefully.
I have more votes than you think. Lots of people don't think Stella would be that good. They remember what an idiot she was.
He still sat back, but with the kind of mulish expression Grace knew meant a mind made up in spite of evidence. It was a shame. He wasn't a bad man, but he would have to learn that in some things, Grace had far more power than showed on the surface. Within a few hours, she had arranged for Stella to vote her shares via Helen, for Helen to be fully briefed on what to do, and had checked up on her other family allies and enemies. On a whim, she looked up Maxim's genetic profile and stared at a sequence now too familiar. Maxim, like Stella, was another of Osman's bastards. He had been placed with a non-Vata family, so he hadn't made it onto her private list.
How did he come to marry a Vata?
She checked further. He had gone to the same university, having grown up in a respectable family. Grace could find nothing wrong with the Termanians on Slaughter Key. She wondered why no one had noticed his gene scan before they married. Everyone had gene scans before marriage to find out if they carried a genetic disease and thus their DNA would need some cleanup surgery. But of course, that was the only purpose of such screening, to find genetic problems. Habit alone made her dig deeper.
Where did the Termanians come from?
Termanian had first shown up in Slaughter Key census records 80 or 90 years before, listing Nexus of all places as their system of origin. Medari Termanian, specialist in industrial colorants and dyes. He'd been recruited by Cossacks Chemicals right out of university. A brother, Isarn, had followed 4 years later to work for the same company. The next generation, born on Slaughter Key, were all involved in science or technology, men and women both. Nothing that looked like an attempt to move into power positions. They had been both lab bench and field scientists, plant managers, that sort of thing. Grace did notice that there was a pattern of adoption, including adoption from relatives back on Nexus. And even then, families were small. In that family, Maxim had seemed to fit. Botany for an agribusiness job.
So, was he adopted from Nexus like others? And how did Nexus come by one of Osman Vata's byblows?
Now that the Slaughter Key Ansible was back up, she could query Nexus's own database for information on the Termanians. There, they were a prominent, wealthy family with strong influence in government and ISC both. A Termanian had been on the board of ISC until very recently. Until, in fact, he'd been shot dead by Rafe Dunbarger for being allied with Louis Parmina. It was beyond belief that an Osman bastard, adopted into the same family that had produced a traitor in ISC, married a Vata girl and ended up safe during the catastrophe, rising to become, even temporarily, CEO of Vata by accident. The only question now was whether Maxim Vata Termanian knew he was a mole. He could have had his implant programmed to hide that from him when he was a child. Still, the important thing was to get him out of his present position and under surveillance, and to comb the databases for any more of Osman's surprises. Grace called Mac Robert on their very private and very secure comm.
Mac!
Problem?
Yes.
Grace explained all the connections.
I'm thinking total surveillance until I can get a quorum together and get him voted out.
You're sure you have the votes, and he's sure he has the votes?
Stella's and Kai's shares tip it easily.
But they aren't here.
But Helen is Stella's proxy, and Kai gave permission for Stella to vote hers when she left Stella at Cascadia. Just took care of that.
We put a guard on Helen. I'll do that first. What about your other votes?
Grace sent a data feed of the list.
You don't think I'm being paranoid?
Only as much as you should be. Make sure they all have protection. And I want you to take precautions, too.
More than I am.
Yeah. I'll be at the office before you leave.
Days earlier, Grace had invited Helen to bring the twins over for a visit. Now she could have used more time for research. MacRobert walked on her left, and the rest of her security team, before and behind, knew which way to jump if she needed to use her own weapon.
Don't fret. The visit won't take that long. You'll figure it out.
You're becoming a mind reader.
Practice and innate talent.
I may need to talk to Helen privately. Can you handle the twins?
I would like to think that having herded all those cadets, I can handle two young children. On the other hand, they are Vadas. I promise nothing.
Helen tried not to look at Grace's arm. The twins stared. Joe's children, now centimeters taller than they had been the summer before. They would have inherited her intellectual curiosity, Grace thought.
It's grown quite a bit. Come on over and take a look.
Char had been.
Grandma said we shouldn't stare.
It's not staring if I say you can look.
They both came over, wide-eyed. Helen grimaced behind them.
They saw the worst, Helen. They might as well see the healing.
What's the green stuff? Shouldn't it be pink, like our insides? Or clear, so you can see better?
Children.
Grace waved her hand. Hush.
It was almost clear pinkish until 2-10 days ago. It's grown enough that they switched to the green. I don't completely understand it myself, but it has something to do with enhancing skin formation. Because the bones and muscles are growing faster than normal, the skin must grow faster too, and it can dry out and split more easily at this stage.
Justin looked more closely at it.
Oh. Is the skin going to look like a young woman's skin when it comes out, or wrinkly like the rest of yours?
Grace didn't have to look to know that Helen was rolling her eyes at this breach of manners.
It will look smooth. And yes, it won't match. I don't care.
I thought it would be baby-sized, and it's as big as our arms now. Can you wiggle the fingers?
Grace wiggled her fingers. Both children's eyes widened.
I have to wiggle my fingers. I have to bend the elbow and everything, or it would come out too weak to be useful. It'll be in the sheath only for another 4-10 days, and then I'll start serious work with it.
Grace didn't mention the painful therapy she was already getting 3 times a week. Some things children didn't need to know.
It has fingernails.
Grace almost laughed. The twins looked so interested, and so like Joe at that age. And Helen looked just as horrified as she had when she'd found Grace showing Joe how to field strip a pistol.
Would you like some cake?
2 little noses wrinkled.
Fruit cake?
No, pound cake with ice cream on top.
Yes, please.
Go on into the kitchen through there.
The twins darted off.
It's all right, Helen. They're looking good. Happy, curious, normal children.
It's a lot harder without Stavros. I thought I did most of the parenting before, but I realize now what a balance he gave.
Grace led the way to the kitchen.
None of the others have stepped in?
We're all overloaded, trying to keep things going, deal with the legal tangles. I have help, of course, but it's not the same.
In the kitchen, MacRobert was scooping out ice cream, and the twins were up on stools, leaning over the counter, watching him.
You'd think I never fed them, once their appetite came back.
That's the age. They're in a growth spurt, aren't they?
Do you have children?
MacRobert pushed the filled bowls over to the children and handed them spoons.
Not of the body. No, Sarah.
Grace could feel the pressure of Helen's curiosity. She had not expected to find a man in Grace's kitchen, though she should have. They hadn't hidden anything. MacRobert had been around ever since the shooting.
Have you heard from Stella?
She's in Cascadia.
I know that.
And she's doing a fine job of running Vata Enterprises there.
I know that, too. But she hasn't contacted me yet, not once.
MacRobert raised one eyebrow and went out the kitchen door to the back of the house where his office was. Grace glanced at the twins.
Is this the time to get into it?
I just want to know. Is she all right? Is something wrong? Is she upset about... Is she upset about... something?
The two little pitchers at the counter paused, spoons partway to their mouths. Their eyes slid sideways to watch the grown-ups. Grace could practically see their ears stretching out sideways.
She's upset about finding out at the trial. She blames both of us.
She thinks I should have told her. But you know why I didn't.
I know.
Grace had argued years before against those reasons and had lost.
And she'll get over it.
You think?
She will, because she's your daughter. And because...
Grace realized she could not explain the whole reason, that Stella was now in loco parentis for Toby and Zori, and discovering for herself the difficulties of parenting.
I love her.
Helen didn't say, and she's all I have left, which they both understood.
If she doesn't...
Except for that one brief period, Grace had never considered becoming a parent, and Joel, bless him, had understood that when they married. She made a mental note to tell Stella to call her mother. Fight with her, yell at her if necessary, but at least call her.
She will.
What about Kai? Do you think she'll get over this military thing and come back to the family and help Stella run the business?
Probably not.
Helen was a nice woman, and a fine mind in her own field, but really, Grace didn't understand how anyone could not see what Kai was, what Kai had always been.
We need her. She should marry and settle down. It would be good for Kai. Give her a base.
MacRobert came back into the kitchen as if Grace's wish for an interruption had summoned him.
Kai marry? I doubt that. Now that she's not beside it over that good-looking boy.
She has a boyfriend?
Had. Not anymore. I don't think she's the marrying kind, Kai.
Well, something has to bring her back. She can't spend her whole life running around the galaxy having adventures. She's Gerard's daughter. She's his heir. We need her here.
When Grace glanced at MacRobert, he flicked a finger signal that meant calm down. She realized then that the back of her neck was hot.
If she lives through this, she may come back. But I suspect they'll tap her for work in the new combined fleet. Perhaps the family can buy out her interest.
But she's Vata.
Helen noticed the twins, smeary faces intently watching the grown-ups.
Justin, Char, go wash those faces.
The twins slid off their stools and headed slowly for the kitchen sink.
In the bathroom, down the hall on the right, and your hands with soap. They have so much energy.
It's not going to be the same, Helen. Kai and Stella won't be like Stavros and Gerard.
I know that, but...
Stella will run Vata. She's doing it, she's good at it, and Kai will give her the votes. You'll get Stella back, Helen, but Kai is just not a Vata anymore.
There's no just about Vata.
I didn't mean it that way. Mac, if the children want to play outside, would you take them into the yard?
I'm sure they'll want to.
He headed back toward the hall.
Hey, you two. Come on, outside. Your Aunt Grace has put in a whole play space for you.
It was her own exercise space, but they didn't have to know that.
Is he yours? Who is he?
Master Sergeant MacRobert, retired from Space Force. He was at the Academy when Kai was there. He's been working with me at Defense.
That's not exactly what I meant. Are you going to marry again? It's been so long.
Joel had died over 20 years before.
No. But I am sometimes going to have friends you don't know about, Helen, just as I always did. And it's really none of your business.
Well, I asked because I care, Grace.
Well, then, if you care, Mac and I are very good friends these days. We don't intend to marry, and I doubt we'll move in together. We like our independence. But I don't necessarily kick him out of the house before bedtime. And yes, we've shared a bed.
You didn't have to...
Tell you everything? I haven't. But remember, Helen, what I told you last summer. I won't ever tell you everything, and usually I won't tell you what I don't think you need to know. That's the rule I lived by for decades, working for Varta, reporting to your Stavros. He understood. I hope you will.
Is that the reason Stella isn't calling me? She doesn't think I need to know something?
It may be, but she was angry with both of us. She has to communicate with me. Pure business relating to deals between the Slaughterkey Defense Department and Varta Enterprises. We don't chat. Sometimes it's her people talking to my people. She doesn't have to communicate with you. So any reason not to may seem sufficient to her.
I wish I had told her. You were right, I was wrong. But you know, Grace, people can get very tired of one person always being right. You demand that people trust you. You keep secrets. You taught Stella to be sneaky.
Now, I didn't do that. I taught her to be skillfully sneaky. But the girl was sneaky before. She wouldn't have gotten past you with those relationships.
And there you are, being right again. Damn it, Grace, would you please be wrong once in a while? Just to give me a little comfort.
Grace shivered. She couldn't help it.
Helen, I have been wrong more times than I can count. Maxim pointed out that I missed the conspiracy against Varta. I told him it wasn't in my brief, and it wasn't, but it was the biggest mistake I ever made. You can blame me for that, as he does if you want. Your husband dead, or your children, but Stella. Don't think I don't blame myself. I do. And last summer, this...
Grace lifted the developing arm.
This is another mistake.
You saved the children.
Yes, but I didn't prevent the attack. And that was my job, and I knew it. I stayed up too late. I overslept. I should have been up to notice the perimeter alarms.
Or you should have told me how to read them. You can't do everything yourself, Grace.
For years I had to.
She had learned, was learning in this past year, how to delegate, how to depend on others more. But it was not easy.
Well, if you admit you aren't always right, I guess I can learn to stand it when you are. Two poor old ladies, you and I.
You're not old.
I feel old sometimes, especially when the twins are at their most energetic. Well, we've got that settled, I guess. What's all this about needing extra security coverage in Maxim? He seems harmless enough, if not very talented.
Grace explained in more detail than she had in the earlier contact.
So, that's why Mac wanted more security on you and the children until this is over with. Maybe Maxim's just putting the same determination into staying on here as he put into his research. Maybe the connection with Termanians on Nexus is just coincidence. But there are a few too many coincidences in the situation for me to be complacent. Better safe, and so on.
His performance, compared with Stella's, certainly justifies removing him from consideration as a permanent CEO. But we do need someone in charge of operations here, and Stella can't do it from there.
I don't suppose, since you're feeling better, you'd consider hiring more help and doing it yourself?
Or Stella could come home.
Not at present. There are things going on there, and she needs to be where she is.
I don't think I'm suited. I really don't know that much about the business. Though, yes, I do understand the agricultural end. And I don't want to turn the twins over to staff only at this point.
Well, we have to find someone, and I'd hate to go outside the family. Think about it.
Immediately after the close of that first meeting, Kai was ushered into another with the Moscow Confederation's Assistant Minister for Military Deployment, Omar Edgerton, and several high-ranking members of their military establishment. Edgerton introduced her to Admiral Fossey, in charge of system defense, Admiral Handlin, in charge of defense forces near Cascadia, and Admiral Trey, in charge of strategic planning. All were a head taller than Kai and decades older. She registered the moment of disbelief and then the courteous recovery. She also met Commander Dowich, head of the military construction and repair yard in orbit around Cascadia, Commander Bellis of Oak Squadron, Commander Corleone of Pine Squadron. Kai wondered how the spacefaring culture that had settled Moscow's system had ever become so fixated on trees. Not that there was anything wrong with trees. Commander Dowich didn't wait for the meeting to convene.
Admiral Vada, delighted to meet you. You've been in touch with us about the availability of modular combat command centers.
Yes, we have. And received the details shortly before docking here. I have a few questions, but this may not be the time.
Kai glanced up the table at Fosse and Edgerton, who looked a little annoyed.
Now that the government's decided to commit to alliance with Slaughter Key, and you're designated to command the Slaughter Key ships, we have to figure out how to work with you.
Though our agenda's fairly fluid and dependent on you.
Kai wondered if it would be discourteous to ask if this meant the government was committing actual ships to the cause, and decided it probably would be. After a long moment of silence, she realized they were waiting for her to make a start.
As you know, I just arrived today, and just got out of a meeting with your government. So I'd like to hear what ideas and questions you have for me before we start on mine for you.
Kai nodded at Commander Bellis.
Do you have any idea where Tarek will strike next? Or what kinds of targets he's after?
Our group thinks he'll go after shipyards manufacturing large warships, Commander. The Bissonette yards, which he captured along with much of their fleet, are tooled for smaller ships. They can build only a few large ones at a time. In several encounters, we've seen nothing larger than a Bissonette cruiser. In fact, they were Bissonette cruisers. We're also concerned that Turek may now have accumulated enough capital to simply order ships built for his force.
Surely no one would build ships for a pirate.
For money, Kai knew, some people would braid a noose for their own necks.
Molly, you should see the things I get in from contractors. Some people have never grasped that if you cheat your protection, you don't have protection. I'm sure that somewhere in the universe, some profit-mad shipbuilder is quite willing to supply the means of his own destruction.
Turek could be ordering ships through governments sympathetic to him in some way.
Why would anyone be sympathetic to him?
Mackenzie, the mercenary company, pointed out that there's been a resurgence of anti-Humod sentiment and violence in a number of systems. It's a minority, but a fervent and sometimes militant minority. The intel you shared with me and the briefings you sent before we landed showed that the man you believe was Turek's local agent held memberships in several anti-Humod organizations. Gretna, where we're sure Turek had dealings, is a vehemently anti-Humod society, to the point that they refused basic assistance to a ship full of refugees, all Humods, from one of Turek's attacks. And though we think he attacked Polson because of its six-vector jump point, he was particularly brutal to the population, killing everyone who could not cram into one of the few ships to escape. Polson's entire population were high mod.
What does he have against Humods?
I have no idea. I'm not even sure that he personally does. But anti-Humods are a minority group that he might have targeted as potential allies. We expect he's also made contact with or taken over some traditional criminal organizations.
Kai waited for comments. None came.
We started compiling a list of construction yards that build large warships. I'm sure you know there aren't very many. And the next step, now that we're here, is to contact those whose ansibles are still working and find out if they've had orders for new ships or have ships in storage.
Edgerton looked at Commander Dowich.
Ben, what's your take on this?
Moray's the nearest big yard to us. Their ansible's still up and I have a contact there. What specifically do you want to know?
Have they had orders for large warships in the past, oh, say 3 years, or orders from governments of systems they know are anti-Humod? Religious or secular, doesn't matter.
Religious would be like the Miznarii, right? Think given implants or modifications some deity wouldn't like?
That's one. My understanding is there's a range of strictness about it, and different groups have different names. They're all concerned with the purity of the human race, though. Whatever they mean by that.
I'll call them as soon as we're done here.
One thing we would like from you is your analysis of the tactical and strategic implications of these new ansibles. My staff have worked on that, but we have no experience, and yours would be most helpful.
Kai handed around the data cubes she'd brought.
We have experience only with the older type, the ones the pirates are using. Those communicate only from unit to unit. The ones my cousin Toby invented also communicate with system ansibles.
here are some post-battle analyses of our two most recent actions.
Is there any communication while in FTL flight?
No, but you can communicate immediately after downjump. There's no waiting, as there is with scan, for the signal to clear. As you've probably realized, instantaneous communication, ship to ship, greatly improves command and control before and during combat. Your ships can be more dispersed, and yet fully aware of one another's position and movement.
Is the discrepancy between communication and scan distracting?
It was, until we figured out how to display the scan data from one ship on another.
Kai saw confusion on their faces.
We don't have the right setup, but it works like this. A ship 2 light hours there,
she pointed down the table,
can load its current scan data for transmission by onboard Ansible to a ship here,
she pointed to herself.
So, if I have a spare screen hooked up, I can see that ship's scan data in real time on my ship.
So, in effect, you can make scan instantaneous as well.
Only if you have a source with minimal light lag near what you want to scan. I imagine with a sufficiently large AI and the right software, with enough data sources, you could form a near-real-time integrated model of a battle area.
I still see the potential for a lot of confusion.
Turek is using stealthed observer ships. We captured one with most of its electronics intact. Apparently, he's using something like this, but with only a few data sources, the observer ship itself and one or two of his warships. I'm not sure if the AI is capable of really complex modeling, but it can receive and send scan data from multiple sources and make at least a crude model. You'll see the effect of that in the box-top battle on those cubes.
We had not thought of that approach. I think we could break for an hour. Give me a chance to ping R&D and Ben to send a message to Moray.
Fine. And we might also let Admiral Vada arrange what she needs with Commander Dowich.
Kai sensed that some resistance had given way, though she could not tell what had done it.
I've looked at the design data you sent me.
Commander Dowich lit a display, and Vanguard's schematics came up.
Now, the only place we can put the CCC module, our smallest, is here.
He pointed to the aft starboard cargo bay in the original plan, now occupied by the starboard weapons bay and munitions storage and the firing range.
All that? It must have room for 20 people.
No, Admiral, only half a dozen, and it's cramped inside. Some of the gear you need in there is bulky, and it's built with hull-grade bulkheads. It's completely self-contained with its own limited life support, so if the ship's damaged, you still have functionality. Now, originally, these were designed as command centers for automated in-system supply convoys. One ship would run up to 3 others, so it was essential that if the ship it was on took damage, the AI could still control the others.
But that takes out my aft battery on that side. I was hoping you could fit it into my office and stateroom area.
Not a hope, I'm sorry. Even for the 40 or so ships you'll have on your first cruise, you'll need a lot of gear. You'll have not only a mirror of the sensor suite on Vanguard, but Ansible-boosted mirrors of others, direct to you, no waiting. Well, direct to your scan crew, 3 of them. Now the command unit, your command seat, is again self-contained. Should something breach the CCC, you'll have at least 24 hours of life support. Now full displays mirrored there as HUDs, tunable with your implant once we install the software.
I see.
We can make larger ones, but ideally a CCC for the large fleet would be built in from the beginning, designed in. And that may be what Turek would find most useful in a purpose-built warship.
How soon can you start, and how long does it take?
As soon as you clear whatever you need and find quarters here, we can move her over and get to work. Maybe 20 days, if we're lucky. 30 otherwise.
Turek's not going to sit still and do nothing for 30 days.
Dowich opened his mouth, but didn't say anything.
I know. It's not your fault. That is fast. We just have to hope that he doesn't hit here. I'll tell my people to pack up. Do you need them all off?
No, only anyone who bunks in that area and anyone you want here. The Yard has basic support, and we can use the extra help as well.
Thanks, Commander. I'll send for my things right away, and I'll have Hugh Pratang contact you when the ship's clear.
Finally, Kai was free to meet with the other Slaughter Key captains. She had talked to several of them before arriving, but this would be the first time face-to-face. She had their dossiers. Though privateers, they had all trained primarily as merchanters, and represented a dozen of Slaughter Key's minor shippers. She'd asked Argelos to meet with them first, along with Hugh Pratang, who would be her flag captain on Vanguard in case she was late. And she was, because she was buttonholed in the corridor by the Slaughter Key ambassador, who needed 15 minutes of her time right that moment. For this meeting, she had chosen a site closer to the branches where most were docked. The room wasn't as luxurious as the offices upstation, but the Cascadians had moved in the necessary table and chairs and installed a good display system. All were older, and most looked other than delighted to be where they were. Their military advisors had much the same expressions, ranging from politely noncommittal to frankly negative. From the dossiers Slaughter Key Defense had forwarded, Kai had identified five who might cause serious trouble. One had not shown up at all, perhaps delayed in transit, perhaps simply refusing to come. The military advisors had all stood up quickly, acknowledging her rank, but most of the captains stayed seated. That was not a promising start, but Kai said nothing, walking instead to the head of the long table where a place had been left for her. Argelos moved to the empty seat on her right, and Yamini, after a quick smile and nod to his fellow military advisors, sat at her left. Kai sat down. The military advisors also sat.
"I'm Admiral Vada. I'm presuming you all received information on me from Slaughter Key Defense, is that correct?"
Mostly nods. One captain, Canelos, her implant informed her, one of those she thought might be a problem, stared at Kai.
"Grace Vada's your relative, right? How's that qualify you for admiral at your age?"
"Grace is a relative, yes. That's not why I'm admiral. I'm an admiral because I'm the only person who's commanded a force against our enemy, and the only person besides Turek who has fought space battles, plural, under the conditions now operating, with instantaneous communication between ships during the battle."
A lean, gray-haired woman leaned forward in the chair next to Canelos. Captain Gillian Merced. Someone had noted on her dossier that her ship, Termagant, was aptly named. Complaints had been lodged against her for attacking trade ships, but she had five confirmed pirate captures to her credit, second only to Captain Kufal.
"Oh, right. I'm sure you have so much combat experience."
Kai looked at her. The woman shifted in her chair, but did not look away.
"Since that little affair at Sabine II, which I believe was covered in the news a while back..."
The woman gave a tight nod.
"During which my ship was captured by mercs, assigned to hold officers of other captured ships, and we had a mutiny which I personally ended by shooting the ringleaders..."
There was a stir along the table, a subtle withdrawal.
"Since then I have fought multiple engagements, including capturing a larger armed pirate vessel with my unarmed trader. Some of you might remember an old small Vada ship called Glynis Jones."
"You captured something with old Glynis? How'd you do that, play possum?"
Tardin, not expected to be a problem.
"Something like that, yes. And they didn't know I had EMP mines aboard."
Silence. They were all attentive now. Just as well. Kai didn't want to answer the question of where she'd gotten the mines and why.
"You're aware of the attacks on Vada, I'm sure. I was on Belinta, delivering cargo when that started. After that, I was the target of multiple assassination attempts, as well as ship attacks. Later, realizing the need for a multi-system force, I started trying to organize one. That's when Captain Argelos, another Slaughter Key privateer, joined me. Tell them about that, if you would."
Argelos pulled out a control for the room's display functions.
"We had seven ships to start with. The Admiral wasn't commanding. She'd chosen to let an older, supposedly more experienced officer from Bissonnette command. Three Bissonnette ships were with us, plus the two of us, a ship from Ciudad, and someone who turned out to be a plant, one of Turek's people. No way to know that at the time."
He put up a graphic of the system where they'd gone to train.
"Thing is, that commander hadn't had experience with the onboard Ansibles, the way the Admiral had, and she couldn't adjust her battle plans. The Ciudad ship left the group."
Argelos glanced at Kai, but she didn't yield. She had insisted that they not complicate the explanation with a personality and cultural conflict.
"And then returned to warn us that the other captain had been a traitor, and that enemy ships were in the system about to attack. He tried to intervene, delay them, and his ship was blown. The Admiral and I had just been arguing for a more open formation, but the Bissonnette commander just didn't trust the Ansibles, so we were in tight when the enemy attacked, and only three ships made it out. One of the Bissonnette ships chose to follow the Admiral's orders.
We were lucky. Got off with minor damage. We had a full loadout of munitions, but that wasn't the deciding factor. They expected us to do what their spy had watched us train for, only I changed things.
Kai skipped over the fight at Gretna, not really a space battle, and the interval at Adelaide.
We picked up some allies, Ransom's Rangers.
Is that those fancy boys and all that gold and glitter?
Very competent ship handlers. Invaluable in what came next. We came into a situation at an empty system where a Merc company, you've all heard of Mackensy, I assume, was holding a training exercise and had been attacked by Turek's force, which outnumbered them. We were able to break up their attack and then assist in the recovery of wounded. But a second battle occurred some days later when an ISC fleet had arrived to deal with us for repairing the relay Ansible in that system.
You fought an ISC fleet?
That was Kufal's military advisor, Major Steen.
No. Turek had come back with what he thought was enough ships to take our small force and the rest of the Mercs. What he didn't know was that the ISC force was due to arrive.
How do you know that?
Later. Suffice that I did. I also knew that a Merc convoy was on its way to trade out training cadres. There was considerable confusion. The ISC commanders thought I was the enemy. The Merc convoy knew better. Turek returned in force, using ships they'd gotten from Bissonnette when they overran that system, and they claimed to be something called Blue Ridge Defense. Luckily, I'd been able to establish good communications with the Mercs by placing one of my smaller ships, one of the Ransom's Rangers, close to the Merc ship, and another as an observer and relay.
She had their full attention now, even troublemakers.
It was interesting there for a bit.
Bocanegro's advisor, Griffith, sat forward.
We've been briefed on this onboard Ansible thing. I don't understand how Turek ended up with some, and we have some. And they aren't what Vada Enterprises is now selling, are they?
We still don't know how Turek found out such things existed. Though I believe there are people in ISC looking into that. How we got them, found out about them at all, is that first ship I captured. There were a lot of them on it, along with other illicit cargo. I didn't know what they were at first, and I certainly didn't grasp their military significance until later. I didn't know Turek had them. I didn't even know who Turek was, or have any idea of the scope of the attacks he had made and was making.
I see that. So you think this ship was transporting them to Turek?
Kai did not want to get into the tangled family mess that Osman Vada represented.
There's evidence that Turek and this ship were working together, yes. Whether it was transporting them to Turek's fleet from some manufacturing facility or to Turek's agents in various systems, we don't know. I expect others were also involved. But the existence of onboard Ansibles explains how Turek and the other pirate groups were able to coordinate their attacks and overcome planetary defense forces. We've always depended on light-speed communications, and tactics in space required consideration of light lag.
Does this mean we're going to see instantaneous scan, real-time data anytime soon?
I'm the wrong person to ask. My concern is how to use the technology to advantage in combat.
Which brings up the point, just how different is it to fight with Ansible communications among ships? That ought to improve control.
It does. I've been working on new tactical formations and moves, as has Turek's force. What we've discovered is that he usually sends in more than one stealthed observer, small ships packed with scan and communications gear, positioned in different parts of the system he plans to attack. We have no post-battle analyses of his successful attacks other than from Bissonnette. There, he used his surveillance of system defense training to determine when they would be lowest on munitions and fuel, least able to fight. He probably did the same in other systems, but we have no proof. Captain Ransom captured one of his observers in the boxtop battle. It's now part of this fleet.
What about security?
We've modified the Ansibles we first captured. As it is now, we can listen in on Turek's force, though we don't know the language or code or whatever it is, and so far they've shown no indication they can listen in on our transmissions. But as with any Ansible, these have both general and directed capability. When they're talking with directed ship-to-ship, we can't hear them. All we get are the general announcements, and possibly not all of those.
Only three faces were still closed, showing resistance. Kai picked up the display controller and switched it on.
Here's a simulation of Boxtop, Phase 1. This is taken from a combination of scan data from our ships, with some additional data Mackenzie gave us, rendered in Poro space, with time zero as our down jump. The blue icons are the Mackenzie ships, red are Turek's, green are ours. Notice these two in particular.
She made their icons blink.
These are the stealthed observers. Now, this is what we saw on scan at down jump.
On another display, she put that up.
If I hadn't seen their attack formation before, I would not have expected it. Because without real-time communication, those ships would shoot each other, not just the enemy.
So what did you do?
Kai changed displays on the second area.
This. Because we had onboard Ansibles, we could spread out, come in on different vectors.
She ran through the rest of the sequence, using the simulation to indicate weapons vectors, integrating scan data from all the ships.
Now, this is what we all need to be able to do. I know that some of your ships have only limited micro-jump capability and that all of them may have problems resulting from conversion to armed traders.
What kind of problems?
Structural. Those of you with beam weapons may have fatigue in the support members resulting from excess heat dissipation and inadequate coolant capacity. I'll need a complete combat history for each ship. How many engagements, what load of weapons. For missile attacks, the ratio of firing between missile batteries. For beam weapons, total time of fire.
I never heard of that before.
I hadn't either. But Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation, which started its existence with conversions similar to ours, discovered the problem with its first ships and warned me about mine. Trade ships just aren't built to handle the additional stresses of sustained or repeated combat. When they did the engineering analysis, sure enough, there were signs of stress in the mounts for the beam. Cascadia doesn't have the capacity to check all your ships at once, and we dare not have so many out of commission. So you'll need to help with a complete review of maintenance and repair, plus those details I just asked for on your ship's combat exposure. If you did live fire exercises, include those as combat. Also, any damage taken with details on repair history. From that, we'll prioritize use of the facilities here for evaluation and, if time allows, repair.
Can structural strain be repaired?
It's possible to make temporary repairs, but bringing these ships up to full equivalency with purpose-built military vessels would require complete rebuilding and would take a minimum of a year.
We can't wait that long, that's obvious. So you want us to go into battle with ships that might fall apart against military-grade ships? Isn't that...
stupid. That's what it is. Stupid. Why didn't the Rector send real warships if that's what's needed?
The two of you, with your rate of pirate capture, have probably got the most hours of weapons use on your ships. I will certainly understand if you feel it's too risky to take part in this venture.
Merced smiled and sat back, arms folded. Kufal looked watchful.
However, if you choose not to join, then your letters of marque will be rescinded and your ships and yourselves will be held here until I deem it safe to let you travel again.
Merced came upright, fists clenched.
You can't do that! You have no right!
On the contrary, I have authorization from the Slaughter Key Defense Department from which your letters of marque were issued. The Moscow Confederation government is unwilling to allow armed but unaligned vessels to operate in its space in a time of war.
Those...
Silence!
Merced stopped, mouth open. Kai glanced around the table.
This is Cascadia. Some of you, as new visitors here, may wonder if the Cascadians really enforce their strict laws of courtesy. I can assure you, they do. A former Vada transport captain was executed here for culpable rudeness to an official. While I have no intention of enforcing the laws to their fullest when we are not in public, you should know that Cascadia has superb surveillance, and this compartment was supplied by the Cascadian government. Open contempt for the government will not be tolerated. It might get you killed. But worse than that, it will imperil our mission.
You're saying we have to join you or be stuck here with no ship and no income?
That is unfortunately the situation. It's not a situation I manufactured. I didn't ask the Rector to reassign you. We weren't in contact when she did it. Like you, I think Slaughter Key Space Force would have been the more appropriate choice.
The military advisors looked thoughtful. The captain's expressions ranged from barely suppressed fury to apparent resignation.
In order to brief you at all, I had to reveal the existence of not only onboard Ansibles, but also the modification that made our communications secure. So far as we know, the pirates still don't know about that. And thus, those of you who do and are not bound by the oath the rest of you will be asked to take must not be free to chatter about it.
I don't chatter.
Captain, tell me why I should believe you or trust you.
Merced glowered a moment, glanced from side to side at her fellow privateers, and, getting no encouragement, finally shook her head.
I suppose you have no reason to, other than my record.
Your record emphasized that I would find you troublesome. I won't quote it.
Oh, please, go ahead. I wager everyone who knows me could come up close without even looking at it. Stubborn?
Kai nodded.
Thought so. Defiant, resist advice, reckless, combative.
Pretty much. Quarrelsome, disrespectful, hypersensitive, argumentative, reckless.
You know, I was kicked out of Space Force Academy in my second year, 31 years ago. Unable to maintain military courtesy under pressure, they said. I decked a senior cadet.
And you surely know I was kicked out.
But you were in the honor squad. You were the goody-two-shoes kind. I heard about you. Vata's daughter, straight arrow.
You can always spend the rest of this war in custody here, which will be no fun at all.
I can't be a straight arrow. I can't be a butt kisser. I can fight like blazes, anyone, anywhere, anytime. But I can't just sit back and be given stupid orders by...
Kai pulled out her Rossi Smith and laid it on the table in front of her. Utter stillness in the room. Eyes shifted from her to Merced and back. She pushed up one sleeve, showing the sheath of one of her knives.
If you feel it necessary, Captain Merced, we can adjourn for an hour to the gym assigned to our crews, and you can find out just how straight arrow I am these days. This is my personal firearm. I won't notch a blood beast tusk grip, but I assure you it's been blooded more than once. And this is just one of my personal knives. I gutted a man twice my weight with the big one, fighting hand-to-hand in zero gravity to save my ship. So if my being too innocent worries you, get over it.
One-on-one, Kai looked Merced up and down. You wouldn't stand a chance. Kai had no doubt of that. The older woman was fit, and no doubt had won her share of brawls. But Kai had seen enough to know Merced lacked the training she herself had. Kai, and she was sure everyone else, saw the realization come slowly to Merced's expression that Kai was as formidable as she claimed.
It might be fun to find out. But you said we had a war to fight.
We do. Do you want in on the fight?
I suppose.
As Kai continued to stare her down, Merced nodded.
All right. Yes, I do. And I'll try to be good.
No. I need your best performance. And your record says that comes not from being good in the traditional sense, but from being the wild card.
I don't have to stay in pokey formations?
Sometimes, but not always. When we get to specific battle plans, I'll tell you about it. But now, Kai looked around the table again, collecting everyone's attention. This time it wasn't hard. I need to know, from all of you, whether you can commit fully to this. It's not like privateering. We intend to fight, and we must fight as a coordinated force.
I'm in.
The others all nodded, with varying degrees of enthusiasm, and not a few glances at the pistol, as Kai picked it up, spun it for emphasis, and reholstered it. After that long day, Kai headed back to Vanguard to see how Hugh was coming along in preparing the ship to go to refitting and acquire its modular CCC.
She knew she would have to move to quarters on Cascadia Station, and Stella's guest room was already full, but not tonight. She was tired, but excited at the same time. At last, there would be a joint force, and, she grinned to herself at the thought, she had handled the Slaughter Key privateers, even Merced. Hera Gannett, Kai's escort, stopped suddenly.
Isn't that Rafe Dunbarger?
Rafe, in a perfectly tailored business suit, still looked like Rafe, but without the familiar edge. He also looked older and tired, and in some subtle way defeated. His smile, though, when he met her eyes, was much the same. Her heart raced. Kai nodded to him, trying to damp the excitement she felt.
Rafe!
She choked back the "at last" that would have been natural, along with the very unmilitary desire to grin like a fool. After all, she told a room full of dignitaries that she had no feelings for him. She must not be seen by anyone, even her bodyguard and his, making the opposite obvious.
Kai, I'm glad to see you.
He might have spoken to a casual acquaintance as calmly. She felt her heart lurch in her chest as she wondered if he felt nothing, if she was being a silly schoolgirl.
You are...
changed, she wanted to say. No longer interested. Someone else entirely wearing Rafe's face.
Well, quite well. And you?
Kai couldn't help being slightly annoyed. He should know her better than that. She wondered what kind of game he was playing.
I'm fine. And your family?
His eyes sagged shut briefly. His smile now seemed forced.
They're much better. My father's recovery is still progressing, albeit slowly. Penny, my sister, is working for the company now.
They might have been distant acquaintances, politely reintroducing themselves. Kai felt a surge of impatience. They could surely get beyond that.
So, you're here for the conference?
Yes. ISC and the Nexus governments are, as I'm sure you've been told, closely related. Nexus has depended on the ISC's fleet for a long time, and they're not pleased to find out it's not very good. And as Stella may have told you, one of our subsidiaries here holds a license to manufacture the new Ansibles on Cascadia, so my presence was considered necessary.
The awkward moment lengthened. The obvious bodyguard at his side stared at Kai and nudged Rafe, who startled.
Oh, sorry. Kai, I want you to meet Gary. He was instrumental in rescuing my family.
Gary looked like a very hard case indeed. Kai could feel Hera Gannett's alertness, like a radiant heater. The man smiled suddenly, a remarkably open smile for someone so obviously dangerous.
Gary Marin. Rafe knew me a long time back. I have had a private security company. Now I'm working mostly for him, something I would have never expected.
Rafe can be quite unexpected.
Kai felt Hera's slight relaxation. Gary glanced at Rafe, a look somewhere between fatherly and mischievous.
That he can. But I understand you too can be unexpected.
Kai rocked back on her heels for a moment.
It's considered appropriate in commanders. Surprise being one of the principles of successful warfare.
Rafe's grin looked natural this time. Gary shook his head.
You told me, Rafe, but I didn't believe it. And this is the woman?
Enough, or I'll be late for the meeting. Kai, you'll excuse me. If the Alliance holds, we may meet again to discuss the status of the ISC fleet.
He nodded, turned away. Gary shrugged and followed.
The woman? Is he talking about you, Admiral?
Kai was more annoyed than she wanted to admit.
Rafe has probably told him that I'm an innocent child warrior with a ramrod up her rear, and he's surprised to find that I'm not 16 or something.
I'm not sure I like this place. It's so polite. I keep thinking something else is going on.
Trade and profit, I know that much.
Where there's money, there's trouble. Spies, thieves, crooks of all kinds. If Turek doesn't have agents here, I'll be very surprised.
He certainly did. Toby fell in love with the daughter of one, and there's no knowing if the locals ferreted out all of them. But I don't think they'll do anything on the station, do you? Not after they caught Zori's father.
If they can. Get rid of you, and they've gotten rid of someone they already know is a dangerously efficient commander. Ma'am, if you don't mind, what do you really think of that man?
Rafe's bodyguard?
No. Ser Dunbarger. He's... He's different than I remember him. What do you think?
I think he's gotten stuffy and boring. Kai was appalled at her own honesty. He was a rogue. That much was obvious before. But at least he was entertaining, and he'd quit treating me like an imbecile. And he gave me good advice. But now, I guess he's distancing himself from all that. From everything in his life as it used to be. And I was part of that life. I don't think it's just the present diplomatic problem. She felt sad, even hollow. It wasn't as bad as what Hal had done, but it hurt in the same places. Hera started to say something, then very obviously stopped herself. Kai didn't want to think more about Rafe, about the bond she had been sure they had. But she could not quite push him out of mind. Gary didn't say anything until they were out of earshot.
Quite a woman. So that's the infamous Kai Vada.
You don't know the half of it.
Seeing Stella again had been difficult enough. But for both of them, their official positions as heads of their respective enterprises had enforced a business attitude. No doubt at all that Stella was well over him, but he could not shake her sense of self, not that he wanted to these days. And he had never been that connected to her. But seeing Kai, realizing that he had not forgotten the least detail of her face, her expressions, even her smell, that shook him. It was impossible.
She's not what I expected.
And what did you expect?
From your family and the gossips at ISC, some hard-faced, over-muscled criminal type. From her cousin, a juvenile military martinet.
How did you read her, then?
I'm not sure. The military part shows, and clearly she's young, in years anyway. But there's something else. I'd say she's a natural killer.
She is.
And you would know. Yes, well, she's not as one-dimensional as your family and her cousin seem to see her. She expected more from you, you know.
I know. I expected... I don't know. That it would be different.
What? You? Her? The meeting?
All of those.
Once he had imagined a meeting that ended with a life together. A life that suited both of them.
You want her?
I... did.
Do? Come on, Rafe. I've known you for years. Even the years you weren't there, I'll bet I could name the scams you pulled. The messes you got into.
Rafe could feel the back of his neck heating up.
You always did have good intel.
Did you ever try with her?
Once. She dumped me on my back.
You are doomed.
Rafe glanced at him. He was grinning, without losing any of his concentration on their surroundings.
Man like you, woman who can meet him head on, you're doomed. She might be the making of you, though.
I can't.
Why? You're not that much older. It wouldn't be cradle robbing.
She has her life. She needs to concentrate on it. And politically, right now, you know how the Vadas are regarded on Nexus.
And maybe she wouldn't want you? Or maybe at some level you wonder if your family is right about the Vadas.
Not that. Never that. Not about the Vadas as a whole, and absolutely not Kai. But I can't subject her to that kind of situation, where others are suspicious of her. And anyway, she's busy.
And you're busy. And the beauteous Stella is busy, and everyone's busy. Right, there's a war on. I'm not forgetting that.
Gary's opinion of that excuse stung.
I thought at first she was too young, too straight-laced. I really didn't have any interest in her beyond teasing her, trying to get her off balance.
I tell you again, Rafe, you're doomed.
It's not me. I haven't been that way.
In love?
Rafe felt the heat in his neck rise to his face.
Whatever you want to call it. Interested in that way, anyway. For a long time. If ever. I never thought about marriage. What did I have to offer? Renegade of the family, living on the edge? And why would I, anyway? I was having too much fun.
I understand. When I finally settled down, it came as a surprise to me, too. And now I have children.
You?
Yes. Carefully kept away from the business. But I see them whenever I'm not on a job. Their mother, well, she's not exactly like your Kai.
She's not my Kai.
Yet. Thing is, men like us have to find women who understand men like us. And will stick with us anyway.
She's not...
Rafe. You may not be the snake I thought you were, at least not to people you care about, but you still don't get it. That's a remarkable woman. She was looking at you that way.
I didn't see it.
Your body did.
Rafe struggled with the combined desire to scream out loud or clobber Gary, neither of which was a good idea on Cascadia.
Tell me that she didn't see that.
No, I don't mean that way. You can relax about that part.
Thank you.
But I'm trained to read people, and I read them very well. The little signs, they were all there. You knew, or your body knew, that she knew that she wanted you, and you chose to ignore it. She's not going to be happy about that.
She wouldn't be. She would think he'd snubbed her. She would try to explain it to herself as her fault. She'd mistaken the earlier interest. It was all on her side. She would, being Kai, take herself in hand, lock down her shields, blaming herself.
I should talk to Stella.
You should put your head in a meat grinder, you mean? Talk to the family? Now I know for sure you're doomed. The old Rafe would know better than that without thinking about it. It's not even lust. It's love.
It's a mess. And I don't want to talk about it.